What we're witnessing is the sugar high. It's like, you know, the Democrats and maybe some independents are relieved that it's not Joe Biden. They're like, thank God it's somebody. Thank God it's Harris. But what happens with every sugar high? We all crash at the end of it. And they're going to crash once they start dissecting her record.
Scott Jennings. Man, Scott Jennings is having a good couple months over on CNN. People dipping in to see what CNN has to say with all of the craziness that's taking place. And I think he's a pretty well-spoken conservative representative. I've said before that I don't tune into CNN or MSNBC and ever see anybody who really correctly represents my take on any particular issue. And, you know, maybe the left can say the same thing about Fox News, although I know that a lot of people who are on Fox News on the regular that you probably don't like because they're always there talking about their leftist point of view. Scott Jennings, he's not doing such a bad job over on CNN. I've enjoyed listening to him when he's talking. I guess that actually I looked at the wrong clip. That was 2016 spokesman Brian Lanza. Let's listen to the Scott Jennings clip from CNN here on the Trump race. Let's listen in.
First of all, Donald Trump didn't cancel this debate. The Democrats canceled the debate that Donald Trump agreed to when they defenestrated the poor president of the United States, who he still, where is he? A. B. It's the Democrats who have put the debate details on hold here. I'm sure they're going to debate. They have to debate and they should debate. And, you know, Trump right now has a, according to the Wall Street Journal, a 51% job approval from his time in office versus what you get out of Biden Harris, which is somewhere in the mid 30s.
So where is the momentum? Is the momentum just in a complete and total wave right behind Kamala Harris? There are a few things that are about to happen in the news cycle that should, if history repeats itself, and it traditionally does, continue to give Kamala Harris a little bit of high ground. The first is going to be her VP pick. A lot of people are thinking it's going to be the governor of Pennsylvania, Shapiro. I have no idea who the pick is. Every time they mention J.B. Pritzker's name, I'm like, why would you do that? You're trying to win Illinois? What are you trying to get out of J.B. Pritzker other than money? And, you know, I'm thinking J.B. Pritzker's going to throw money your way one way or the other if he feels like it can help get the Democrats the victory. Is he going to spend more if it's himself? I just don't really understand. Brad, can you see any upside to having J.B. Pritzker on the ticket?
For the Democrats or for me? No, I don't know what the upside is to him, other than if your plan is to pander to, which it seems to be this, they're really going after the suburban single women vote. And J.B. Pritzker, the biggest draw that he has is what he's done with abortion in Illinois. And I feel like that is their quote unquote upside to having him on. Outside of that, I don't know what the appeal would be.
I don't see it. I don't think he's going to be high up there. But Shapiro seems to be one of the leading candidates. And so you're going to find out who that vice president pick is. I think it's going to be kind of similar to what the Republicans did right before the convention comes. We're going to find out who that VP pick is. There's going to be a lot of noise surrounding, a lot of excitement. And then just like the J.D. Vance thing, a lot of the Oppo research starts to dump out. They try to figure out what sticks and off we go. But then you have the convention. I don't really look at I'm not looking at the convention for the left as a way to bring people in, because I don't really feel like, unless they make the whole thing big, scary Trump, I don't know what they have that's really unifying, even within their own party. We were listening to Kilmeade before the show started here, and I don't know who the guest was, but he was talking about the possibility of Shapiro being on the vice presidential side of the Kamala Harris ticket. And they're talking about how they played some sound for someone's like, you know, it would be kind of risky to put a Jew on and as the vice president. And I'm like, what? And it's true, because the Democrat Party, they have a dramatic conflict of interest within the members of their own party on what's taking place in the Middle East. And it's not like you can look at the Middle East and be like, well, that issue's going to calm down. It's escalating. It's escalating, you know, over the course of last night. When they take out the leader of Hamas,
Yeah, I don't know if he was the guy, but he was one of the guys.
And that was 12 hours after they took out number two in Hezbollah or whatever it was. I mean, this issue is being pressed, and it's not gonna. They're not gonna subside on this issue in the Middle East, so that the folks in the West can get their political issue straightened out. Sides will have to be taken in Chicago, where this convention is being held. They're gonna have Democrats protesting the Democrat convention because the Democrats inside the convention aren't going to be leading the charge in the way the protesters outside want them to be. And we've seen what they're capable of. I mean, these are destructive people. And I don't want to sum it up too simply, but they're pretty ignorant. The protesters who have been activated for this particular cause have their lines crossed a little bit on their ability to support, you know, wasn't it Netanyahu? Didn't he refer to the people who are out here like gays for Palestine or whatever it is? And he's like, you don't get it.
Yeah.
How come those facts don't matter? I mean, why are you not out protesting against Hamas to release the hostages and to stop the need for conflict? Because Hamas started it. It's really that simple.
Man, it is a wild mindset. I haven't delved too much into it, but it has to do with intersectionality. So they have to divide people up into the oppressed and oppressors. And so whenever they look at anybody that's having success, Israel's having success, they believe that those that are around them or under their influence are not having success because of what they're doing. So they just look at Palestine and Hamas and these organizations out there, and they're like, well, the reason they're not having success must be because Israel's bad, and therefore we gotta, you know, side with the quote unquote underdog. They don't look at that and say, well, the reason they're not having success is every ounce of aid that Israel has sent, they've either used it to build rockets, terror tunnels, shot their own citizens, hid under schools so that they could basically wipe Israel out. That's the whole goal of Hamas. That's the whole goal of Hezbollah. They all just want to see Israel wiped off the face of the map. The people on the left that support those groups don't understand that that's who they are, and that sometimes the people that aren't having success aren't actually the good guys.
Let's listen to Trey Yingst report on this last 24 hours or so in Israel.
In the northern part of this country, continuous rocket and drone attacks taking place. Just last evening, another Israeli civilian was killed in one of those attacks. Just earlier in the month, you had that drone attack launched by the Houthis in Yemen, another Iran-backed organization. We were here on the ground in Tel Aviv when that explosion rocked the city, killing someone here. You have these Iran-backed Iraqi and Syrian Shia militias that today are threatening new attacks, not just against Israel, but against American bases across the region. And then you have this X factor of Iran and how it will respond to this strike against its capital overnight. We're talking about seven different fronts here when you include the West Bank.
Wow.
A really unprecedented moment for the region and a country that is at war for the past 300 days.
Trey Yingst just said that there are seven different fronts that Israel is facing. That's a lot of fronts for
the forces in Israel
like
are tired. We've been talking with not only the defense minister, Yoav Gallant, but also soldiers on the front line in Gaza. We were in Rafah, that southernmost city, at the beginning of the month, speaking with soldiers there as they battled Hamas on the front lines. There are really major questions about what comes next, but Israeli forces have to remain on high alert. It's part of the reason that notice to airmen was issued, closing the airspace in the northern part of this country. And remember, there are three tiers of air defense systems here. You have the lowest tier, the Iron Dome. You have the David Sling and also the Arrow missile defense system. We saw all three in use when Iran attacked Israel earlier this year. All of those systems on alert today over concerns that Iran could directly respond against Israel following this attack that killed the leader of Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, overnight in Tehran. And also that significant strike, the first time, we should note, since this war began in early October, that Israel has targeted Hezbollah in the Lebanese capital of Beirut.
So, yeah, the stakes are pretty high. Tensions are very high. The natural question for people like you and me is, well, how does America get involved? Secretary Lloyd Austin commented,
I don't think war is inevitable.
I maintain that. I think there's always room and opportunities for diplomacy, and I'd like to see parties pursue those opportunities. If Israel is attacked, we certainly will help defend Israel.
If Israel's attacked, we will certainly help defend Israel. We're getting to a point right now where we're going to have to ask ourselves as a country. Voting is going to be open here before you know it, because I think in Illinois we've got 40 days of voting. Election Day is November 5th. It's right around the corner. And we're going to have to elect a president, Donald Trump, who has spoken very firmly, first of all, in support of Israel, of course, but also in action and in word, talked about the importance of containing Iran and not subsidizing Iran the way that we have under this current administration. Kamala Harris is going to have to mend two wings of her party that she needs to show up and vote for her on November 5th. When you hear Secretary Lloyd Austin say, "I don't think war in the Middle East is inevitable, but if Israel is attacked, we will help defend," how is it that Kamala Harris is going to continue to serve both wings of that Democratic Party and actively pursue the defense of Israel? This is a huge conflict within the Democrat Party, and I think it's important that Kamala Harris speak on that issue. She needs to be asked about this. She needs to be on record about this so that her voters understand, do you agree with Secretary Austin? What happens if Iran goes straight in on Israel? I mean, we've already seen Israel be attacked by Hamas out of their neighbors in Gaza. Where are you at, Vice President Harris? I would certainly like to know. Our friend of the show here, Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, also talked about this issue. Let's listen to what he had to say.
Hezbollah should have been out of that region 20 years ago, because there was a UN Security Council resolution, 1701, said they're supposed to withdraw, in fact, disarm Hezbollah north of the Litani River. They haven't done that. Second, I think what you're seeing is you, not to be a pessimist, but I think you're starting to see an escalatory cycle that is going to get quite dangerous, because if Hezbollah does respond, be it Haifa or it goes into Tel Aviv, then the Israelis got no option but go really, really hard back into Lebanon against Hezbollah. And I think that is very, very probable right now. I don't think Hezbollah will take their foot off the gas at all.
This is an issue that is not going away in the Middle East. It's incredibly consequential for the global community. And we need to know exactly where our presidential candidates are on America's responsibility, involvement, commitment. What is it that America is going to do as this continues to escalate? I'm not 100% sure. I don't really know how Kamala Harris threads this needle. And when you hear commentators, as we did leading into the show, talking with Brian Kilmeade, the sound they played, saying that it would be problematic for Shapiro to be added to the ticket for Kamala Harris because he's Jewish. I mean, what a time to be alive, to be looking at the Democrat Party not being able to reconcile that issue. It caused me to drop my jaw when I heard that. Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I shouldn't be surprised by that. Joe Concha is going to join us when we come back. He's a Fox News contributor, of course. He's got a new book out, and I want you to get it. Progressively Worse, Why Today's Democrats Ain't Your Daddy's Donkeys. It is available now. But I want to ask him, Kamala. We have talked to Joe Concha over and over and over again about the viability, to use a word, of Joe Biden. Well, he's not in it anymore. And I've been saying he's not going to be the guy, and he isn't the guy. Is Kamala the girl? Is she the one who's going to get the nomination at the convention? And can she beat Donald Trump? Let's ask Joe Concha when we come back.
We who believe in the freedom to live safe from gun violence will finally pass universal background checks, red flag laws, and an assault weapons ban. We who believe in reproductive freedom will stop Donald Trump's extreme abortion bans, and when Congress passes a law to restore reproductive freedoms, as President of the United States, I will sign it into law.
Oh, what you know, Joe?
Joe Concha, Fox News contributor.
Well, he's also the author of Progressively Worse, Why Today's Democrats Ain't Your Daddy's Donkeys, which you can get right now. And he's with us. Joe, welcome back. It's a new ball game from the last time you and I had a conversation.
Ever so slightly, right? I mean, man, can you imagine the last like 5 weeks, what's happened? You know, you had the debate, right? Then all these calls for Biden to drop out. Then the Supreme Court rules that Trump actually does have some immunity. And then they said, oh, by the way, that Jack Smith case documents, we're going to throw that out now. The Judge Cannon did that. Then there was only an assassination attempt on Trump's life. And then you had places like MSNBC still saying to this day, well, we're not really sure if he got shot. I mean, it's unbelievable. The U.S. Secret Service just completely falling apart. Then Kamala Harris is installed as the Democratic candidate as Biden drops out. He still hasn't taken one question as to why he dropped out. And she still hasn't taken one question on anything. So that's where we are at this point. And it's quite a time to be alive, Annie.
You're 100%. I was on vacation for like two of those weeks. Wow. I don't know if it was a mistake or if it was the smartest move I made, but it was incredible to see the news headlines. You listed things there that could have been the top five headlines of the year that actually kind of got lost in the mix, like a lot of the dismissals of Donald Trump's legal problems. Those are huge, too, as well. And we're supposed to just believe that Kamala Harris, we're just going to rid ourselves of every wrong or everything that's ever been on her record ever. And she's just supposed to be the new not Trump. You think she can pull that off?
No, I honestly don't. I think that in the end, social media is this great equalizer. Fox News is a great equalizer. The Andy Frye Show is a great equalizer. So while they try to portray Kamala Harris as some sort of moderate and pretend that all of her past positions don't exist, it's just not going to fly. Because you can't hide the video, right? This isn't like Joe Biden, by the way, in like 1994 in the crime bill, and it's like this grainy video of him talking tough on crime. This is like literally like just a couple of years ago. And she looks the same, sounds the same. And when she says things like, I want to end the fossil fuel industry, I want to abolish ICE, I want to never even think about exploring Remain in Mexico policy or a border wall, or I want to keep sanctuary cities, I think they work. You want to end the private insurance sector? How's that going to work out? Oh, but you also want to give health care to illegals? You believe in late-term abortion? You believe that men should be competing against women? She said all these things. It's all on video. So I think once she debates Trump, then I think all of that gets exposed the same way Biden was exposed. And he could blame, you know, almost being dead. With her, her brain is broken. And you take her out of a teleprompter, Annie, and you take her out of prescriptive remarks, and it's the same thing as Biden. She has no ability to speak extemporaneously, and these positions are her positions, and she can't run from them.
You know, Donald Trump did the, for me, unimaginable in the Joe Biden debate, and he let Joe Biden be the headline, and it took Joe Biden out of the race. Donald Trump was masterful in that last debate in a way that I did not expect him to be that disciplined. I get real worried about thinking about another debate with Kamala Harris because, you know, he loves to compete. He loves to fight. What do you want him to do in that eventual debate should it happen?
No insults. Don't bring up DEI. Don't call her dumb. Don't play their game. Just simply stick to the 16 or 17 policy positions that I laid out, most of them, I think, and just hammer on it every time and then speak to the American people directly. Like, almost pretend like she's not there. You're not debating this person. You're taking your case right to the American people. You say, hey, Pennsylvania, she said that she 100% her words that she wants to ban fracking in your state. That will devastate your economy. She says she doesn't want it now. She's saying that only to get elected. She's going to change her mind once she gets back in. We all know this. Hey, Michigan, how do you like that electric vehicle mandate that Biden and Harris keep pushing because that's going to put thousands of auto workers out of work? Hey, Arizona, how do you like the fact that Kamala Harris let 10 million people into this country, hundreds of terrorists on the FBI terror watch list, and she's compared our border agents to the KKK. So how do you feel about that? And if you agree with those positions, then great. Vote for my opponent. Don't even call her by name. If you don't, then I'm your guy because you already saw what my presidency looked like. And if you compare my presidency to this administration, I think it's an easy choice.
We're sending that, advice straight to the Trump campaign. We're speaking with Joe Concha right now. I know we only got you for a few more minutes here, but I think that your new book that people can get right now, Progressively Worse, you're talking about today's Democrats versus the Democrats of generations before. There's an identity crisis out there with a lot of voters and the left. I was just talking about the problem that they have, especially with the conflict in the Middle East as it continues to get more tense. That issue is not going to go away. What do you make of people right now having that existential crisis on the left and what to do with it should they choose to vote for Kamala Harris?
I mean, I think what we're seeing here is a sugar high, right? They got rid of the old man, and I don't care who they would have put up there, whether it be Kamala Harris or Josh Shapiro, Gretchen Whitmer. I think in the end, you would see people just rallying around that person because it was an anybody but Biden type of thing because, well, they knew that he couldn't win. So as far as the existential threat, I think in the end, this still is about what I just talked about, how they still own their record on inflation, on crime, on the border, foreign policy. I mean, does the world, has it looked this unstable in decades? I mean, it feels like the whole thing's about to blow up. And once people start to get serious, and we're not talking about RuPaul's drag queens anymore, and that was her first interview, by the way, Kamala Harris as a Democratic nominee, and you take away all the fluff, I think then in the end, at least in those swing states that matter, Trump wins, and he wins quite easily.
Do you think Kamala Harris has a better shot at a victory over Joe Biden?
Than Joe Biden? No, I just don't. Because with him, he could at least kind of relate to these union workers in places like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. And I don't see how she connects with these people, given her past policy positions. And again, once you take her out of the teleprompter, she's not a likable person. Like almost her entire staff has turned over at this point. And you hear the horror stories. And again, this is a person who didn't receive one vote in 2020 when she ran for president, not one vote as a Democratic nominee in 2024. There's a reason for that.
Yeah, it completely. Joe Concha, thank you for being with us. We know you got to run. I want to encourage people to get your new book. It's out right now, Progressively Worse, Why Today's Democrats Ain't Your Daddy's Donkeys. Looking forward to listening into it. Thanks, Joe. Good to talk to you.
Thank you, Annie. Take care.
You as well. Bye-bye. He's a Fox News contributor. You can check him on Twitter, X, at Joe Concha TV. Speaking of, you know, every single time I have a guest on the show and I can identify whatever I choose to identify with them, but their Twitter handle or their X handle, every single time I say it, I have a quick panic attack. Do I say X or do I say Twitter? And did you see who was it tweeted at Elon Musk? I think it was Gavin Newsom off the top of my head. I think this happened over my vacation and said something disparaging about ever since Elon Musk bought Twitter and then was like, you know, all hell broke loose. And Elon Musk's response is, we really hate it when you dead name us. It's just like,
so great.
Set match.
It's amazing.
Did you see Kamala Harris's rally yesterday?
I saw parts of it. I didn't see the whole thing. Yeah, a lot of people. You know what I saw is I saw a video that after the music was done, that people were getting up and leaving.
It doesn't matter, though.
Mm-mm.
I mean, it doesn't matter if the people who vote for Kamala Harris even know who she is, if they vote. If Megan Thee Stallion comes and shakes her booty on the stage and becomes a draw to fill an arena full of people for Kamala Harris, if that same poll can make people show up during voting season or on election day, it does not matter. And I think that that's something that can be easily overlooked by people who are like, oh, they were just there to see Megan Thee Stallion. If they were, and they'll still translate that to show up to vote, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. The question then becomes, if they're just there to see Megan Thee Stallion and then they leave when the politics part of it starts, are they even really going to be bothered to show up to vote?
Maybe. More likely to. I mean, these are low information voters exist on both sides.
Oh, yeah.
I know that Rush Limbaugh coined this term, and it's a very important thing to pay attention to, and he was smart as per usual to do so, but to highlight people who get all worked up in like October and then they go vote because it's trendy, but they don't know what they're voting for. Mm-hmm. You know, these are the people who are like, I got to get me one of those Obama phones and my Obama money and stuff like that. That was a repeat message that had been sent to voters to say, you got to vote for this because you're going to get that. Then they go vote and then they're like, give me my Obama phone. None of anything after the vote matters to anybody. They just need the vote.
Mm-hmm.
Which is when we had Scott Pressler on the show yesterday, encourage you to check that out on the podcast because he was very descriptive in how you can become a part of the solution. Yes, in red Missouri. Yes, in blue Illinois. How you can help where it matters. This election will come down to counties in swing states. Swing counties will decide who becomes the president in 2024. And he was very descriptive. He's earlyvoteaction.com. Know it off the top of my head. Have the app on my phone. You can go be a part of the solution by connecting right there. But you got to go out and get the people who don't have as much information on your side of the aisle, and you got to tell them why they got to vote. You got to be involved. You got to participate. It's not enough to vote. We all have to do our part to get people registered, to make people aware of what the situation is, to have real meaningful conversations with people who are, I mean, have you ever talked to someone and they're like, I'm not voting, they're all crooks anyway? That's a lot of people who think that.
Yeah.
They want to keep the system as far away from themselves because they don't want it to rub off on themselves. They're disgusted by it, probably rightfully so. But their solution is to not participate.
Right. And ironically enough, that solution to not participate, that solution not to get involved, actually perpetuates the cycle that they hate. You know, I was listening to another show the other day and this.
What?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
It was after our show was off the air. Okay.
I thought you just podcast our show over and over and over.
Yeah. Yeah. I just listened to just go over and over and over. What can I do better here? But I was listening to this person was all worked up because they didn't like the candidates that were on the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was Joe, even if it was Kamala, Trump, whoever, they didn't like it. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, but did you get involved in the primary?
Yeah.
You know, this idea that there is a I don't think the moderate middle is as big as everybody thinks it is. I think it's there. But this idea that there's this moderate middle out there, it's people who are complacent that don't vote in the primaries. And that's why you get the most extreme candidates out of the primaries, because the ones that are most involved in the primaries are the ones that are most, I don't know, wonkish on politics. They're the most involved. They want the most out of this. So they get in there, they push the issue, they get their candidate picked. And then those of you that don't participate in those things, you go, why do we have these crazy people as our candidates? If you look at our candidates as crazy. And it's because you're not involved. It's because you don't vote. It's because you don't educate yourself on the voters and you just wait until October of the presidential election year and you jump in there and you vote. I mean, it's a self-perpetuating cycle. The fix to the issue that everybody sees in politics is the people.
I'm glad you brought up the primary, because our YouTube poll for today, which I went back and forth about asking this because it's kind of isolating, but I know the people listening to the station are very passionate about it. And so I wanted to give you guys the opportunity to weigh in. Who do you support for Missouri governor? Of course, we got four options. I picked the top three that are running in Missouri on the Republican side: Ashcroft, Igel, and Kehoe, in alphabetical order. And the fourth option is you're not in Missouri or you're supporting somebody else. So who do you support for Missouri governor? I think that they've worked very hard to delineate themselves from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see how in some ways the messages from pick any two have kind of teamed up against the other one. There's a lot of that taking place as well. But you do have the opportunity in Missouri to set forth a direction that the state is going to go for the next 4 years. And it starts in the primary. Of course, you're going to show up on Election Day and vote for that governor party of choice come November 5th. But right now you got to pick the guy who you want to represent you. And, you know, maybe you're listening and you're supporting the Democrat, whatever. That's someone else. Or you're not in Missouri. Ashcroft, Igel, and Kehoe. Curious where our audience is. I understand that Kehoe has been on the show multiple times when I've been out. I think Mike Elam generally has him on,
yeah.
We've had Ashcroft and Igel on multiple times. And we're going to see about getting them back on the show. I know that some of them are asking to come back on, so we're trying to figure out how to fit them in before next Tuesday. But who do you got? And if you want to come onto the YouTube chat, come make your case for the candidate that you really want to see take that victory on Tuesday. The election is Tuesday, so you got to be prepared for that. Like G-Wibs, he says, I'm in Illinois, I'll take whoever loses. And that's been, I'm like trying to figure out how constitutionally we can just, J.B. Pritzker, you go run for vice president. we'll take whoever loses. First runner up, you get the state of Illinois. It's a bigger state. It's a big mess. Let us know what you think. Annie Fry YouTube channel. Also, if you want to support one of those and you want to tell other people about it and you've got an X account, go out there and repost our live broadcast on Twitter. There, all the candidates are tagged in it, so everybody's got equal access to it. We're not trying to tip the scales. I truly don't have... people have asked me, like, Annie, who should I vote in the Missouri governor race? I'm not here to tell you who to vote in the Missouri governor race. I'm sure that Mark Cox and Mark Reardon have... I know that Mark Cox has a voter guide out. I don't know if Reardon does that, but... I didn't even really endorse in the Illinois governor race. And, you know, I was happy to support. We had all of those candidates. Mm-hmm. They all came in. They all came on. You know, I'm not really big in endorsements in general. I don't really want to tell you what to do. I'll tell you what I think about them. And then you can kind of put that together with what you think about them. But you're capable of making that decision. I have I've met all of them. I believe I met Kehoe at the governor's ball that I emceed a few years ago, but I think you have a lot of great options. So I'm curious. I want to learn from you today. You got to go to the Annie Fry YouTube channel to vote, though. Let us know. Ashcroft, Igel, Kehoe, or you're not in Missouri or you're voting for someone else. That's the poll for today. Let's take a quick break. We'll get Wiggins America in here. He's got unspoken rules for men. Okay. Let's see if Wiggins America has some sage advice for you men out there and the women who love them. We'll be right back. This is a serious radio show.
Kamala got Megan Thee Stallion. Trump needs to give this guy.
This is like something that Joe Biden would do to like appeal to the Latin community, like when he held up his phone playing Bieber's Despacito.
Uh-huh.
It's like, check out this guy.
And
I think this
like,
is Spanish.
I figured this out, right? Look at me. Everybody, I got this.
I think that the story behind this, we've talked about this Chacarone story before, but uh-huh. That this guy had this like song and this beat.
Yeah.
And they like, I don't know if this is like lore or if this is the truth, but he was like, I got this great thing going. I don't have all the lyrics worked out yet. So they're like, we'll just produce it.
Well, yeah, it's close. The story I understand is that he had about 25% of the song figured out.
The Shakira part.
He had the beat figured out. He had kind of the way he wanted the lyrics to go. And he sent this to his record label saying it would kind of go like this. And they're like, why don't we just put this one out?
So they put it out on purpose?
I don't know if it was on purpose or whether it was leaked. Wiggins!
Oh! Wiggins! A fitting intro.
Clearly it worked, though.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite songs.
Me too.
It makes me, legit makes me for real smile every time I hear it.
Can you ever eat a macaron without thinking of that song?
I've never thought of that song, eating a macaron, but I should eat a macaron right now to test the theory.
You should. And let us know. Mm-hmm. These are unspoken rules for men. These come from a pastor / motivational speaker guy who's kind of gone viral. This was showing up
so
in my
feed. So the pastor is a man.
Yes, he is a man. He is an urban pastor and motivational speaker. And he has all kinds of rules here, unspoken rules that he said, let's go ahead and speak them and make them rules. I want to see whether you guys agree with these, whether you have been taught them, Brad, whether you are teaching them to your son, Annie. And I will just stand here and nod. Number one, you can tell a great deal about a person by their handshake. So make yours strong and firm. Were you ever taught that?
Firm handshake?
Yeah.
Yes.
By your dad?
Yes. Look them in the eye. Make sure that you get the thumb all the way in the wedge. Squeeze firmly, but not hard. It's not a domination thing.
Annie?
Yes, but in not so many words. We did an article one time about things you should be teaching your kids.
Okay.
And it was how to introduce yourself. And a handshake is good. You got to teach your kids how to have a respectable handshake. But yes. Like just even participating in it is big. I don't know that you're like 12-year-old needs to make a business impression on an adult, but to be able to look somebody in the eye and to shake their hands and to understand that is very important. And I think that that is in 2024 is important for women to understand as men. I don't think it's a man thing.
I was about 12 years old when I remember learning this lesson. I was standing outside with my dad and some random HVAC guy, and he told me, the HVAC guy went to shake my hand just to be nice, you know, just to the kid. And my dad told me, no, this is how you do it. And I've always remembered that because both of them kind of had a moment, my dad and the guy, saying, yeah, this is something that needs to be taught. And I was like, ooh, I'm like, this is like a rite of passage thing. I still remember that today. Number two, proper grammar will get you far in life. Mm-hmm. Leave the foul language for the less educated.
Proper grammar and foul language are two separate things.
Yes, that's true. Let's just focus on foul language then, because I think that's the point of it.
Yeah, I don't accept it in my house for my children. I could do better.
I don't know that I've ever heard Brad say a foul word.
I probably have, but it's so...
It's infrequent.
Very infrequent.
I don't much. No. Only if I'm off air and I really need to make a pointed joke. Like I'm driving home a punchline and it works better
for
with
emphasis.
Yeah.
It's usually in a quote if I hear it from you. You're quoting
you're probably right. You're probably right.
Children should not be using that language.
Mm-hmm. Never.
But I think you're going over the poor grammar thing.
Yeah, you can't skip over
that. Okay, fine. Let's talk about poor grammar.
Speak right. Speak good.
Mm-hmm. Great job.
It's so important. I correct my kids if they text me and they say like the wrong there. I'll be like, it's ERE.
Mm-hmm.
Because they need to know and they need to understand that it's important. And I'm not police. I'm not like going through and correcting their text messages with their friends. But when you communicate with me, use the right words. And I'm not like all hot and bothered about punctuation in text messages. But they so infrequently write that they don't have much to, it's not a practice. I think it's one of the things that the digital age has really, really hurt education is that there's so, putting the English language into written word where you have to see it. It's not just about how you say it. It's how you write it. It's how you communicate. You will still be writing for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. You'll be writing emails. You'll be writing text messages. Whatever newfangled thing comes into play next. You still have to know how to communicate through word. And you will elevate yourself above your peers when you speak correctly.
When I was in college, I actually was talking, this has been 12 years ago, and I was talking to the head of the English department. And he's like, you should be an English major. And I'm like, no, I'm not good at English. But he started telling me that he would get papers that are written where people were.
I'm not well at English.
No.
I was going to correct him too, and I couldn't make myself do it.
Correct him incorrectly.
Yeah.
But he was saying that students will write papers and they'll use the letter R instead of A-R-E. And they'll use
like that's so unbelievable.
Yeah. And he was
in a paper
yes. At the college level.
Wow.
And he's like, it's unbelievable how bad grammar is.
So it's like they're writing in text.
Yes.
And if they, I mean, you have to think about the double space. You're a double spacer, aren't you?
I am.
It's wrong.
It is now. It wasn't when I was taught.
It's been journalistically AP style wrong.
It's changed.
For like 15 years.
I know. I was 20 years ago. I was in college.
Yeah. Well, I understand that. But I'm just saying it's not like it just happened yesterday. It's been different for a long time. It looks weird. I actually know that about you, that you're a double spacer.
Yeah, it's habit. It's just habit now.
But you wonder if they go, well, we don't need a double space anymore after a period. You just need a single space after a period. In 10 years, are we like, well, you don't really need to write A-R-E. You can just write R.
I know.
We're gonna end up writing papers the way it used to look like on the cave wall.
Yeah.
But just then people like and you and I are just gonna snorts. Die. Like our souls will wither. Because is there anything worse than when you go back
no,
over
we won't.
An email?
We'll just be the old grouchy generation, which is the same as every other one.
Dang it, you're freaking right.
We'll just be grouchy about something else.
You're right. All right, how about this one? Always carry cash.
Time out. George wants to know about the Oxford comma. You better believe you use our comma.
Oxford comma, yes.
Anyway, go ahead.
Always carry cash.
I don't. It's really fun when I do, though. It's like...
Oh, yeah, I do.
Is it like free money?
Guess what, guys? I got a Jackson in my pocket right now.
I got a Washington in my pocket.
Never pose with alcohol.
Smart.
Yes, I agree with that.
Why?
Because it could be used for... anything. Yep. Listen, I've lived my life as though I might run for office since I was about 12. And I have been very particular about all of those things because a little ahead of my time there, because we didn't have social media when I was in high school. It was invented in college. But it doesn't matter the context. None of the context of the photo matters. The photo can say whatever somebody wants it to say. Don't give them that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true. I didn't think about it in that manner. What about dress well no matter what the occasion?
Always
dress well, though, has changed. It doesn't have to be suit and tie,
that's for sure.
But you have to look like you tried.
It's always okay to be the best dressed person in the room. Mm-hmm. You never, ever want to be the worst dressed person in the room. Who's that today?
Oh.
It ain't me. I got a blazer.
No, it's
on.
Never you. Aww. You're always dressed
nicer.
I feel
like nicer. It might be a tie.
Yeah, you guys are wearing like the same thing.
But I think it's Ryan because it's the hat.
I have a fancy, this is a fancy hat.
Ryan didn't want to do his hair today.
It takes too long. Mm-hmm. Come in and it's all wet, dripping down my back.
Duray Murdoch, when we come back, we're not going to talk about that. That's for sure. Let's talk about Kamala. Don't go away. Men out there and the women who love them. We'll be right back. This is a serious radio show.
Kamala got Megan Thee Stallion. Trump needs to give this guy.
This is like something that Joe Biden would do to like appeal to the Latin community, like when he held up his phone playing Bieber's Despacito.
Uh-huh.
It's like, check out this guy.
And
I think this
like,
is Spanish.
I figured this out, right? look at me. Everybody, I got this.
I think that the story behind this, we've talked about this Chacarone story before, but uh-huh. That this guy had this like song and this beat.
Yeah.
And they like, I don't know if this is like lore or if this is the truth, but he was like, I got this great thing going. I don't have all the lyrics worked out yet. So they're like, we'll just produce it.
Well, yeah, it's close. The story I understand is that he had about 25% of the song figured out.
The Chacarone part.
He had the beat figured out. He had kind of the way he wanted the lyrics to go. And he sent this to his record label saying it would kind of go like this. And they're like, why don't we just put this one out?
So they put it out on purpose?
I don't know if it was on purpose or whether it was leaked. Wiggins!
Oh! Wiggins! A fitting intro.
Clearly it worked, though.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite songs.
Me too.
It makes me, legit makes me for real smile every time I hear it.
Can you ever eat a macaron without thinking of that song?
I've never thought of that song, eating a macaron, but I should eat a macaron right now to test the theory.
You should. And let us know. Mm-hmm. These are unspoken rules for men. These come from a pastor / motivational speaker guy who's kind of gone viral. This was showing up in my feed.
So the pastor is a man?
Yes, he is a man. He is an urban pastor and motivational speaker. And he has all kinds of rules here, unspoken rules that he said, let's go ahead and speak them and make them rules. I want to see whether you guys agree with these, whether you have been taught them, Brad, whether you are teaching them to your son, Annie. And I will just stand here and nod. Number one, you can tell a great deal about a person by their handshake. So make yours strong and firm. Were you ever taught that?
Firm handshake?
Yeah.
Yes.
By your dad?
Yes. Look them in the eye. Make sure that you get the thumb all the way in the wedge. Squeeze firmly, but not hard. It's not a domination thing.
Annie?
Yes, but in not so many words. We did an article one time about things you should be teaching your kids.
Okay.
And it was how to introduce yourself. And a handshake is good. You got to teach your kids how to have a respectable handshake. But
yes.
Like just even participating in it is big. I don't know that you're like 12-year-old needs to make a business impression on an adult, but to be able to look somebody in the eye and to shake their hands and to understand that is very important. And I think that that is in 2024 is important for women to understand as men. I don't think it's a man thing.
I was about 12 years old when I remember learning this lesson. I was standing outside with my dad and some random HVAC guy, and he told me, the HVAC guy went to shake my hand just to be nice, you know, just to the kid. And my dad told me, no, this is how you do it. And I've always remembered that because both of them kind of had a moment, my dad and the guy, saying, yeah, this is something that needs to be taught. And I was like, ooh, I'm like, this is like a rite of passage thing. I still remember that today. Number two, proper grammar will get you far in life. Mm-hmm. Leave the foul language for the less educated.
Proper grammar and foul language are two separate things.
Yes, that's true. Let's just focus on foul language then, because I think that's the point of it.
Yeah, I don't accept it in my house for my children. I could do better.
I don't know that I've ever heard Brad say a foul word.
I probably have, but it's so...
It's infrequent.
Very infrequent.
I don't much. No. Only if I'm off air and I really need to make a pointed joke. Like I'm driving home a punchline and it works better.
For emphasis.
Yeah.
It's usually in a quote if I hear it from you. You're quoting somebody else.
You're probably right. You're probably right.
Children should not be using that language.
Mm-hmm. Never.
But I think you're going over the poor grammar thing.
Yeah, you can't skip over
okay,
that.
Okay, fine. Let's Andy, talk about poor grammar.
Speak right. Speak good.
Mm-hmm. Great job.
It's so important. I correct my kids if they text me and they say like the wrong there. I'll be like, it's ERE.
Mm-hmm.
Because they need to know and they need to understand that it's important. And I'm not police. I'm not like going through and correcting their text messages with their friends. But when you communicate with me, use the right words. And I'm not like all hot and bothered about punctuation in text messages, but they so infrequently write that they don't have much to, it's not a practice. I think it's one of the things that the digital age has really, really hurt education is that there's so, the putting the English language into written word where you have to see it. It's not just about how you say it. It's how you write it. It's how you communicate. You will still be writing for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. You'll be writing emails. You'll be writing text messages. Whatever newfangled thing comes into play next. You still have to know how to communicate through word. And you will elevate yourself above your peers when you speak correctly.
When I was in college, I actually was talking, this has been 12 years ago, and I was talking to the head of the English department, and he's like, you should be an English major. And I'm like, no, I'm not good at English. But he started telling me that he would get papers that are written where people would...
I'm not well at English.
No.
I was going to correct him too, and I couldn't make myself do it.
Correct him incorrectly.
Yeah.
But he was saying that students will write papers and they'll use the letter R instead of A-R-E. And they'll use
like that's so
you.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And he was
in
he
a
was
paper
in a paper yes. at the college level.
Wow.
And he's like, it's unbelievable how bad grammar is.
So it's like they're writing in text.
Yes.
And if they, I mean, you have to think about the double space. You're a double spacer, aren't you?
I am.
It's wrong.
It is now. It wasn't when I was taught.
It's been journalistically AP style wrong.
It's changed.
For yeah. like 15 years.
I know. I was 20 years ago. I was in college.
Yeah. Well, I understand that, yeah. but I'm just saying it's not like it just happened yesterday. It's been different for a long time. It looks weird. I actually know that about you, that you're a double spacer.
Yeah, it's habit. It's just habit now.
But you wonder if they go, well, we don't need a double space anymore after a period. You just need a single space after a period. In 10 years, are we like, well, you don't really need to write A-R-E. You can just write R.
I know.
We're gonna end up writing papers the way it used to look like on the cave wall.
Yeah.
But just then people like and you and I are just gonna snorts. Die. Like our souls will wither. Because is there anything worse than when you go back
no,
over
we won't.
An email?
We'll just be the
or...
old grouchy generation, which is the same as every other one.
Dang it, you're freaking right.
We'll just be grouchy about something else.
You're right. All right, how about this one? Always carry cash.
Time out. George wants to know about the Oxford comma. You better believe you use our comma.
Oxford comma, yes.
Anyway, go ahead.
Always carry cash.
I don't. It's really fun when I do, though. It's like...
Oh, yeah, I do.
Is it like
guess
free
what,
money?
Guys? I got a Jackson in my pocket right now.
I got a Washington in my pocket.
Never pose with alcohol.
Smart.
Yes, I agree with that.
Why?
Because it could be used for... anything. Yep. Listen, I've lived my life as though I might run for office since I was about 12. And I have been very particular about all of those things because a little ahead of my time there because we didn't have social media when I was in high school. It was invented in college. But it doesn't matter the context. None of the context of the photo matters. The photo can say whatever somebody wants it to say. Don't give them that.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about it in that manner. What about dress well no matter what the occasion? To
yeah,
me,
always
dress well, though, has changed. It doesn't have to be suit and tie,
that's for sure.
But you have to look like you tried.
Never. It's always okay to be the best dressed person in the room. Mm-hmm. You never, ever want to be the worst dressed person in the room. Who's that today?
Oh.
It ain't me. I got a blazer
on. No, it's never you. You're always dressed
nicer. I feel
like
nicer. It might be a tie.
Yeah, you guys are wearing like the same thing.
But I think it's Ryan because it's the hat.
I have a fancy, this is a fancy hat.
Ryan didn't want to do his hair today.
It takes too long. Mm-hmm. Come in and it's all wet, dripping down my back.
Duray Murdoch, when we come back, we're not going to talk about that, that's for sure. Let's talk about Kamala. Don't go away.